Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. And by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com and use the promo code HAMNATION at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 284, January 25th, 2017. Sean Kutzko from the ARRL and Valerie is in Puerto Rico. Hi, everybody. Yep, it's me. I'm back. I got the Greyhound bus in L.A. and it got in here late last night and here we are. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sarah and I rode a Greyhound bus. Yeah, right. But we missed you. And we've been gone for so long, but we're here. And, man, you talk about a blockbuster show. Tonight's the one. Call all your neighbors and your ham radio buddies and everybody else because this is it. And we're going to be really going around the horn tonight. And first, we'll go all the way down to Puerto Rico. Valerie and Jerry are there. How are you doing, Valerie? What's happening?
Doing great. Welcome to Arecibo.
Welcome.
We've got a lot of friends here tonight, scientists, PhDs. We got everything, great stuff coming up in my segment in about a half hour from now. So can't wait to show you guys what's going on here at Arecibo.
We're going to be ready and appreciate you being there. And, of course, we can't do a show without Don. Don, how are you? You doing okay?
I'm doing great. You may be wondering why I have a vintage ICOM neck strap with no vintage ICOM radio on it. It's because I don't have the radio. I was at the Hammond, Louisiana Ham Fest, and I was looking at this, and a guy said, hey, it had $5 on it. And I'm like, yeah, I like old ICOM stuff. And he said, I'll give that to you if you wear it on Ham Nation. I said, sold. So here we are. Now all I got to do is get with Novak and see if I can figure out what kind of radio goes on the end of this. Somebody in the chat room, I'm sure, knows. But we've got a huge show, so don't waste it on me. Get to our guest, Mr. Kutzko.
Yeah, I want to introduce Sean, and we'll come back to you in a few minutes, John. But I wanted to say hi to you, direct from the ARRL. How are you doing?
Hey, Bob, I'm doing great. How's everybody doing tonight?
So far, we're all right. But remember, we have Don here, so anything could happen.
I'll keep watch.
Lots of stuff. We'll be back to you in just a minute. You got some great news, something about a million something. So we're going to talk about it. But before we do that, everybody's going to ask me, so I'm going to do it right out of the chute. What have I been doing? So here's a few pictures of the wonderful NAMM show. Here's day one. And I think we have day two coming up. And we have day three. And that's it. But there's more. Let's see what's up next here. We had all kinds of people. The fellow that you see hugging up to Sarah is a very famous piano player. That's Don Randy. And if you've ever listened to anything like the Beach Boys, Mamas and the Papas, Sonny and Cher in the early days, that is the man that played all the piano and organ for that. He's an incredible guy, doing well. That was a very special guest that came to see us. Do you remember when the band was playing in Paris and the venue got blown up by a terrorist? It was his band. And then secondly and lastly, here is a great band of the guy on the left is the bass player for Idina Menzel. That guy in the purple, we don't see him. The next guy is Fish, Mike Herring. He's a guitarist for New Kids on the Block. And then There we go with Stevie. I don't have to introduce Stevie for sure, but these are just a few of the people that showed up to say hello and play with microphones and whatever. So we're always always gracious to these artists and engineers, especially that come to see their latest gadget they're going to be using. But we've got so much going on. I tell you what, let's go back to Don, and he's got some words about ZipRecruiter, and we'll get that out of the way. Go get him, Don.
I will do that. Have you ever had to hire somebody? I know, Bob, you and your lovely bride have hired many, many people over the years, and it's kind of a pain in the behind sometimes because you've got all these resumes coming in, and you got all these phone calls. Well, ZipRecruiter will completely do away with all that hooey. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. Well, with ZipRecruiter, you can, because with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 200 plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. You find your candidates in any city or industry nationwide, post it once, and the candidates will roll into ZipRecruiter's easy to use interface. You don't have to juggle emails. You don't have to call your office. You don't have to field calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person for your company fast. I wish I would have had ZipRecruiter when I was hiring my assistant. Oh, my Lord, would have made things so much easier. But anyway, if you're looking to fill one job or 100, ZipRecruiter, they're who you need to do. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. Do it right now. You can post your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/twit, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And, of course, ZipRecruiter, we thank you for your support of Ham Nation. You know, somebody else who supports us here on Ham Nation is WTWW, the shortwave, Ted Randall and the QSO show. They're on 5085 and 12.105 right now. So if you're listening to us on WTWW, thank you. And something that's coming up that I'm going to be a part of, Bob, I'm not sure if you've heard about this yet, but the second Tuesday of every month at 8 o'clock p.m. Central, I'm going to be a guest with Ted, and we're going to talk about whatever comes to our mind. We're going to talk about Ham Nation. We're going to talk about the ARRL. We're going to talk about Ham Radio. We're going to talk about Newsline. We'll talk about ourselves. We'll talk about all kinds of people. So the second Tuesday of every month, I'm going to be a regular guest on the QSO show with Ted, and I just could not be happier. And I couldn't be happier about having Sean Kutzko on tonight. So this is going to be a great night. Bob, go ahead and pick it up.
I'm so thrilled also. And Ted and his family are something else. We do a theater organ show there every Saturday night at 8 o'clock. So if you...
Wildly popular. It's wildly popular.
Yeah, it's crazy. We get letters from all over the globe. Okay, I had a couple of emails come through here on my phone. People know I'm here and want to know where I am. So before we cut to Sean, I'm going to take about a minute. I hope I don't make you dizzy here, but we'll do you a little walk around on just one of the four buildings here at Heil Sound. What you're looking at is the finished warehouse that all the products have been finished, of course, tested, and then ready for shipment. There's a whole bunch of PR-30s over there. And just today, I was here when they were finishing up about 150 Pro 7s, and they're all ready to be shipped out. Got many going to the UK, and a whole bunch of them going to Germany. And we're very excited about the UK. Martin Lynch has come on board, and we're happy to have that. So all of you in the UK, you will know what's going on there real shortly. He'll be doing some promo. I should have moved all these. What's behind all these? These are ProSet cases ready to be shipped. They're tested and so on, but they got to be put in their boxes. On the other side, that's all the production line I should have set up so you could have seen that. And I'm sure a lot of you have talked to the service manager, which is Donna, and she's her place is down in on the other corner. This is part of that final test station. We'll come back and I'll show you the where Donna is. And if you talk to her, she's something else. She has been with us for 23 years. And you call out a radio, she'll tell you the pinouts and all that. That's her corner down there where she repairs things and takes care of a lot of stuff. And then we're back to where the Pro 7s were all lined up to be shipped out tomorrow. I think, as I said, I think they did 150 of them today. We get all the parts. They come in various boxes from different places. Usually on that product, it's Malaysia and Taiwan. And there's parts from Tokyo there. And then we line it all up, and the boys and girls build it, and we're there. But that's a quick rundown of just one warehouse. The other warehouses are for raw parts, and some of them are for some finished product, but they're all ready in cases, ready to be shipped out. So there you are. That'll satisfy some of my messages. Okay, enough playing around from me here in Fairview Heights. We're going to get serious about this now. I'm really excited to bring Sean on with us. It's going to be first of many. Sean Cusco, how are you? So good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm doing great.
And you are the public relations and media director at the league, right?
That's correct. Media and public relations. Been here since 2007. Got started at the league back then as the contest branch manager, and switched over to PR in June of 2013.
Yeah, you used to be one that frequented 6 meters a lot. Is that still happening if the band ever opens?
Yeah, the band has not been cooperating for a little while. I haven't spent too much time on 6 meters. I've been a little busy with some other activities that have kept me busy for the last year or so.
Yes, I understand. Well, I have to tell you, I just on the plane coming home, I took my QST with me, and I want everybody listening and watching, I want all of you to go out and get QST. Yes, if you're not a member, we'll talk about that later. You need to be, because the new CEO, he's been on the show and he's going to be on a lot more, Tom Gallagher has written the nicest letter that I've ever seen. You know, we get these really nice documents from some of the magazine's owners. He's the new CEO, and it's called The Neighborhood of Broken Windows. It is amazing, and I want all of you go find this. It's just gorgeous because it really lays out where amateur radio is today and where hopefully it's all going to go. And part of that is what you did this year. You had a spectacular year, and I imagine, Sean, that going in, you're saying, how are we going to do this? Let's hear the story about this past year and the national parks.
Well, the National Parks on the Air event actually culminated just a couple of weeks ago. It was a year-long event to assist the National Park Service in celebrating their centennial in 2016. And I came up with a plan to allow amateur radio to go to about 400 and initially about 430 units across the country. Brought the idea into Norm Fusaro, W3IZ, one of the other staffers here, and that was back in July of 2014 when I first brought him the idea. And he said, this is a fantastic idea. Let's flush this out and run with it. And we came up with the idea of getting amateur radio into the national parks. And the ARRL board of directors voted it as an acceptable program at their July 2015 board meeting. And we were off to the races. We had lots of interest and cooperation from the National Park Service. And as a result of a lot of hard work behind the scenes here at headquarters, we ended up with one of the best amateur radio events of all time. We managed to get amateur radio in about 460 of the eventually the 489 National Park Service units across the country. And that includes national trails and some of the wild and scenic rivers as well. So that added a whole lot of territory across the United States to bring amateur radio into the parks and help the National Park Service celebrate their centennial.
Well, it was a great idea because I thought when this thing started, you're going to be able to bring amateur radio to people that they didn't understand what it ever is. And most don't. If you're not into the hobby, you're going like, what are those guys doing? And I'm sure that you changed the minds of a lot of people. Did you have any stories where some of that went down? Maybe even people being interested and wanting to get involved?
Oh, the best story that I have of introducing amateur radio to people at the parks, there were several park units all across the country that were extremely thrilled to have amateur radio involved with their park. I interacted with Ranger Jim Clark up at Marsh Billings Rockefeller Park up in Vermont, and also their sister park, St. Gaudens, right across the Connecticut River in New Hampshire. And they were thrilled to have amateur radio at their parks because they're a smaller unit within the National Parks Service. And the amateur radio operators that were there gave them a lot more visibility than they normally get, even during the centennial year. That was wonderful, and we had great cooperation from that particular park and numerous other parks across the country. But the best story was Superintendent Mark Weaver, who is the superintendent of the North Country National Scenic Trail. It's a 4,600-mile trail that encompasses 11 or 12 states from New York all the way out to North Dakota, and he called me up. We announced National Parks on the air on October 15th of 2015, and I got a call from him in early November saying, why isn't North Country National Scenic Trail on the units list? And I explained to him that we used an official document from the National Park Service Administrative Headquarters in Washington, D.C., and if a unit wasn't listed on NPS's official piece of paper, we weren't including it for National Parks on the air. And he said, give me a little bit of time. I'll call you back in a while. And right before Christmas, the National Park Service updated that official piece of paper and added a whole bunch of trails and wild and scenic rivers to that list. And that's how all those units ended up on in the National Parks on the Air program. Mark Weaver was so interested and thrilled with the National Parks on the Air program that he actually went out and earned his technician class license. So that's the one of the biggest stories that we had throughout the entire year.
That's wonderful. Well, did you have anything where you had any particular group or? And I'm thinking about youngsters and some of the kids that would put something together. Did anything come from some of the young clubs that tried to work the parks?
Oh, there were dozens, if not hundreds of clubs that got involved with this over the year. The biggest one involving kids that I know of is Hope Lee and James Lee and the Lee family down in Florida. I know that she was just on the program here a couple of weeks ago, and they were very, very active with National Parks on the Air throughout the year with their special event call sign. They were on the air on January 1st from one of the beaches, the seashores in Florida. So they were active all year long in getting kids on the air. I know also that there's a family in Texas, the Harrises, Jennifer and Fred Harris, and they had three kids that they took with them all year long to almost 100 different parks as the year went on. So and I know that their oldest has a license as well. So there was a lot of kid and youth activity throughout National Parks on the Air this year. It was a big success with the youth segment, as it were.
That Lee family, something else. They give you a lot of hope and a lot of faith. I love those.
With a little grace, too.
I love those kids, and I love that family. We need more like that, right?
Oh, absolutely, as much as we could get.
Was there any one operator that had more contacts than anyone? Did you count the contacts through, that way?
We're still crunching a lot of the data. I don't have a specific operation as to which was the best. I believe it's N5 PHT. I may be busting your call. If I am, sorry about that. But we haven't really drilled down into the statistics yet. We're going to do that here in the next month or so. What I can tell you is that there were over 1.1 million contacts made from ham radio operators in National Park Service units this year. 460 out of the 489 units were activated, and that encompassed over 21,000 different visits to these 460 units within the National Park Service. So 21,200 some odd visits by amateur radio operators to the National Park Service units this year. That's pretty good.
Amazing. And they created a million what? Point what?
1.1, just under 1.2 million QSOs. We're still allowing logs to be uploaded. A lot of these operations were done QRP with simpler antennas, and they might have done paper and pencil logging. So we're still, we've allowed the entire month of January for activators. Those are the people that actually went out and transmitted from the parks. We gave them the entire month of January to reconcile and upload their logs. So we still have some logs and some QSOs trickling in. So as of right now, we're sitting at just under 1.2 million contacts.
That's amazing. Congratulations, because that, I just can't think of some of the work that it would take you guys and gals back in Newington to keep up with all this. It's just wonderful, and it just brings a new light to this hobby, and that's personally what I'm looking for. Is I've been a ham since 1956, and I continue to try to wave the flag in new ways, and boy, you guys really busted it this year. So I guess the big question, John, what about the future? Have you thought about anything to upstage this one in 2017?
Well, we are certainly giving it a lot of thought. I don't know if we're going to have the oomph to get anything out for 2017. I was hoping that we would be able to do that, but we're still doing a lot of crunching for National Parks on the Air from 2016. But I guarantee you we're going to have something up our sleeves for 2018. So stay tuned, and you will hear an announcement about something in the months ahead.
We'll have you on to tell us about that, and I look forward to having you on more than that. But you and I are going to take a trip right now to one of our great friends. Valerie and Jerry are in Puerto Rico, and let's see if we can bring her in and join the fracas. Look at that.
Well, I dumped Jerry. I got Angel. That work?
Hey,
Sean. Congratulations on a really successful event again. So looking forward to what you're going to have in store for 2018. We love those kind of operations where you get to get on the air and do all kinds of good stuff. So obviously, we're live here from the control room of Arecibo in Puerto Rico. I'm here with the director of telescope operations, Angel Vasquez, who's also a ham, Whiskey Papa 3 Radio. Welcome, Angel. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of Arecibo and what it's all about?
All right. First, I want to welcome all my friends from Ham Nation. A special shout out to Sean. How you doing, Sean? And Bob, too.
Hey, man. What's going on?
Doing good, Sean. Hey, I didn't recognize you without the hair. Anyway. Welcome to the control room of the Arecibo Observatory, and a special thanks to Val for accepting our invitation here. And we have a lot of friends, the organizing committee. But let's talk about the observatory. So we're in the control room. Actually, we're running an experiment at the moment. We do three types of radio sciences here. One of the radio sciences is atmospheric studies. That's what we're doing at the moment. Atmospheric studies. We also do planetary radar and radio astronomy, with just passive, just receiving from space. And Val wanted me to tell you, okay, the observatory has been here for a while. It was started construction in 1959, and it actually started to operate in 1963. So we've been here a while. And a lot has been changed since 1963, and we're glad we're still here. As you know, this is the world's largest radio radar telescope still, because you probably heard that there's another a telescope in China, but we are the largest radio radar telescope still on Earth. So we have a 1,000-foot dish, and was there anything in specific that you wanted?
Well, you know, the dish itself is does not move. Right. So why don't you tell about how you get to aim where you want to aim?
Sure. See, and usually our dish is 1,000 feet across. So that's the dish is so large that what we do, we move the focal point. So if you see most dishes, you'll see that do this type of rotation. Our dish is fixed. And it's, as you can see from the picture, you can see that that 1,000-foot dish and that structure that is above the telescope, that rotates. And then there's a rail there, that big arm rotates on that underneath that triangle, and on that azimuth arm that we call, we have the dome and the 430 megahertz, another line feed, and that goes up and down. There it is. Yeah, that's a good shot there. And you see the dome on the right, that goes up and down that arc, just to give you an idea, that azimuth arm itself, that's a 302 feet. That's longer than a football field. That dome is a four-story building. And that antenna on the left that we're using right now for the atmospheric sciences, that's 100 feet long. So, and that's suspended 500 feet above that 1,000-foot reflector.
And I'm going to get to climb that tomorrow?
And we're going to try to get you up there tomorrow with my good friend Jerry. So we'll see. We'll see what we can do about that. We got to go a little early. We got some test time. I think we might be able to do that.
And I understand you've had some stars here because they filmed Contact, the movie Contact, here with Jodie Foster. Also, 007, they filmed that here as well, right?
They did. I was fortunate enough, Valerie, to... Funny you should ask. I was fortunate enough to give both Jodie Foster during the movie Contact and Pierce Brosnan during the filming of the movie GoldenEye. I gave them both the tour. So I was in the right place at the right time. Hey, somebody had to do it. I volunteered.
It's a tough job. And then I understand you had some famous hams here, like the crew from K-5 Desecheo. And also Joe Taylor as well, Dr. Joe Taylor. Why don't you tell a little bit about Joe Taylor and his work here?
Sure. Joe Taylor won that's a old picture there. That's me with Joe Taylor with the Nobel Prize. One of my tasks here was I was in charge of pulsar observing, and Joe proved Einstein's theory of relativity with a pulsar in a binary system. And that was in 1993. So Joe has been a friend of mine for many, 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 many years. And luckily, Joe is also a ham. And I've been fortunate also to work with him on moon bounce projects here at the observatory with another good friend, with Jim, WA3FRET, which you'll probably see in a little bit.
And Joe Taylor will be here for the ARRL convention as well. He will be one of the speakers. So why don't we go? We're going to go ahead and bring in an actual scientist from here at Arecibo, Dr. Garrett Vershore. He has his degree in a PhD in radio astronomy from Manchester University. Welcome, Dr. Vershore. You're welcome. And so... Which part of the radio science are you doing here at Arecibo?
I study radio waves from hydrogen gas between the stars that signal at 1.4 gigahertz. So DX rather a long way out too.
That's the furthest DX I've heard of. Now, what are you working on right now here at Arecibo?
Well, exactly a month ago, I was observing here on a long shot experiment, which is challenging some cosmology discoveries. I was actually looking for 3 gigahertz signals from hydrogen clouds in interstellar space. And I may have discovered it, but I need a confirmation observing probably within the next 2 months. And then if it's confirmed, it'll be a really big deal.
That sounds good. And I understand you have a lot of other milestones that you've had in your career.
Yes, I've been very lucky. I was the first person to measure the magnetic field between the stars, and that was a long time ago. It was extremely difficult. It took me 8 years before I succeeded, and I also discovered the coldest hydrogen clouds in the Milky Way, only about 15 degrees above absolute zero. So that was a couple of things that I could... I was fortunate enough when I was working at Jodrell Bank in England, I was the first person to see the fax photograph from the surface of the moon transmitted by the Russian Lunik spacecraft. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and the photograph was handed to me from out of this dark room, and there, holding this tray of fixer, back in, this is 1966, there was a photograph from the surface of the moon.
It was the first man.
So he actually saw the surface of the moon before Neil Armstrong.
Yes, and I actually told Neil Armstrong the story. I went on an eclipse cruise with him to lecture about radio astronomy back in 1973. And we sat at the bar one night, and I told him that I saw this picture and that I said, one small step for man, you know, a giant step for mankind. I made the joke to him, but he thought that it was pretty funny at the time. Anyway, it was incredibly exciting to actually see the surface of the moon for the first time.
Now, I know you were in the back room crunching some numbers. What were you doing back there earlier?
No, I was just talking to other observers. I'm not observing right now. Those are guys studying.
Are you doing any measurements or something?
No, I was in my office making maps.
Very good. Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I appreciate it. And next we're going to bring in Jim Breakall. You're welcome. Thank you both. Thank you both. Jim Breakall, who is a professor at Penn State, Whiskey Alpha 3, Fox Echo Tango, and I didn't really jump Jerry. Here he is, WB9ZAD. And we're going to talk about Jim actually was the inventor of the OWA, the Optimized Wideband Antenna, Yagi. So why don't you ask him? What do you think you want to ask him some questions about? He's better at this technical stuff than I am.
Well, it's great to be back to Arecibo. This is my second time here. And as everybody knows, I love big antennas. So this is like the biggest antenna I've ever been around. So, but we have eight of Jim's designed OWA Yagis at home on 40 through 10 meters. And these are wideband Yagis. And you can operate on 40 meters with VSWR that does not go above 1.1 across the whole band, or any of the other bands, super wideband antennas, which are great. You don't really even have to worry about SWR. So, Jim, tell us about the OWAs, and I'm going to ask you a couple more questions.
Okay. First of all, I have to say that it's great to be in my second home down here at Arecibo. I've been coming here since 1974, and I actually own a farm about a mile away from here where we built a big contest station with some OWA Yagis as well. And I have to say hello to all my class that's back at Penn State in my freshman class. It's called First Year Freshman Seminar, and it's Introduction to Ham Radio,
all right,
which I've been doing since the year 2000. We probably licensed about 500 plus hams at Penn State through this freshman class. The OWA and Yagi, which stands for Optimized Wideband Antenna Yagi, was something that I came up with back in the 1990s. And then with another student, Nathan Miller, and me, we optimized these antennas. Basically, what we did was we used a computer, and we just sort of guided the computer to find the right results. And the right results were to minimize the SWR over a band of frequencies, the peak SWR, to maximize the gain, and to maximize the front to all the rear side lobes. So we reduced all those rear side lobes down. And fortunately, the computer found a result. And the result was...
We have some slides on that, too.
Yeah, okay. And the result was that the first director, which was normally, you know, spaced out at equal distance from, you can see it here, the first director, D1, normally that would have been spaced about the same distance as the reflector is from the feed element, the driven element. But the computer found that if you move that element very close to the driven element, then you could get very, very wide band characteristics. And as you said, the 40-meter Yagi actually has about a megahertz of bandwidth, which is sort of hard to believe, you know, and it's not only the SWR, it's also the gain and the front to back and all the performance value. So I really should say I was the inventor. I think the computer was the inventor, and I just guided the computer to find the right result.
Well, that's hard to do.
And the feed point impedance magically ends up 50 ohms.
Yeah. Wow, that was
that's so what's good. Really nice about it. You don't need any T matches or any gamma matches. You just feed it directly and use a ballon, so you get a one-to-one feed point impedance. Oh, it's a super design, and I love it. And I know most of the big contest stations are using OWAs. So, Jim, what else are you working on? You have another design, and you're going to be giving a talk at the convention about this new design for getting a wide bandwidth antennas. And let's hear about that.
Okay, certainly. Well, Yagis are the thing I've been mainly designing over the years, but I started looking at dipoles. Everybody has a dipole. It's like the most common antenna that every ham either starts at or has. And so I started looking at all the history of ways that people have been optimizing and trying to get wide bandwidth. Things like the double bazooka and the DX special and all these things. And again, using the computer and optimization, I decided that let's not play with the antenna itself, but to actually play with the transmission lines that are connecting the antenna. And I found out that if you can have a certain length of line from the feed point back to a point that's a certain impedance, and then another length of line that has another impedance and length. And there have been techniques over the years, mainly of microwaves using like series matching transmission lines, it's called. But I actually let the computer pick all the impedances and all the lengths, and magic started to happen. Dipoles could be much, much wider to cover the whole 80-meter band with like a 1.4 VSWR. And then I said, 40 meters, and we found 40 meters, like a 1.1 VSWR over the whole band. And so I did report on some of this at the Dayton Antenna Forum, where I've talked a number of times, and I'm going to report on that here as well at the ARRL Puerto Rico State Convention. I also tried it on Yagis, and it works on Yagis too. And that means that like the 40 meter Yagi that you have at your place and I have at my contest station, It really has four elements on a 48-foot boom. Each of those elements weighs a lot, as you well know. Okay, the whole antenna is about 400 pounds. If we could remove one of those elements, we reduce the weight quite a bit. I found out by reducing that close-in director and just adding these series transmission lines, I could get exactly or better performance than what I can with that OWA concept. So the OWA concept, that stands for optimized wideband antenna, but we've been doing it with moving elements and Yagis and things like that. This is going to be standard Yagis or standard dipoles, and all the matching will be done in a transmission line, which I think is pretty exciting.
Are you telling me now that we can start thinking about a three element full size 80 meter Yagi that'll cover the whole band?
It could cover maybe not the whole band, but we could cover quite a bit of the band. That's right. Yeah, we could cover quite a bit. Yeah. Right. 40 meters, no problem, or any of the upper bands, no problem in covering those ranges. So, yeah.
So as you can see, there's going to be a lot of great stuff at the Puerto Rico State Convention. So why don't I bring in Koki and Seraphine, and they're going to talk about the ARRL Puerto Rico State Convention coming up. So we've got Koki here, Whiskey Papa 4, Oscar Victor, and Seraphine, Kilo Papa 4, Sierra Italy Victor. Welcome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how many are on the committee and how long it takes to put this together and things like that?
We have approximately some 15 people. Been working about 8 months. It has from different groups in the island. And we have definitely set up the milestones for this to become the best in the Caribbean.
And can you tell us a little bit about what's all going on at the events this weekend?
It's going to be very, very interesting. We're going to be having forums, very interesting forum, like Dr. Joe Taylor, like Jim Brakel. And By the way, we also have an interesting thing that is called the Iron Ham, which is like a thing. I mean, how can I say it? It's
that's where you do CW's sideband and Riddy, right? Is that the Iron Man competition?
No, oh. It's a competition that involves fox hunting, building an antenna, and also doing as much contest as possible.
And also, you have like barbecue and dinner and different things going.
We're gonna have dinner. It's also it's free. So.
And I think we have a schedule there, Brian, of the Puerto Rico convention, if you want to show that. And then also, if you want to hit that link I included, that shows the forum schedule coming up. So lots to do. Lots of VIPs in the ham world are going to be at this convention. So definitely pretty cool to come. And how many people do you usually have at the convention?
Well, we started, this is going to be our fifth convention. When we started, it was about 600 or so. And last year, we had 1,100 people coming up. So it's been steadily growing. Last year, something was put that really hit me. The CEO for the ARL said that the Puerto Rico convention is much more than a Hamfest. It's a total cultural experience. Because you don't just get the ham fest, you don't get only the different aspect of a convention, but you also experience food, you experience sightseeing, you experience the warmth of the people of Puerto Rico.
And I'm enjoying that warmth very much because I'm from Illinois. So, and I thank you guys for joining us. I guess that's all we've got. Are we frozen, Brian?
Oh, no.
All right.
No.
Well, thank you. I'm going to head it over to George now, and he's going to take it away.
Okay. Well, it's time. And Val and everyone down there in Puerto Rico, great segment on the show tonight. Looks like a great place to be, especially this time of year. I'll have to make it down there one year. Well, right now we're going to get a message from ICOM, and then we'll be right back.
Are you in need of a good New Year's resolution? How about improving your listening skills? ICOM has an array of radios to help you stick to your resolution all year long. Base stations, mobile transceivers, handhelds, and more. ICOM has all the equipment to make 2017 the best year yet. Coming soon, the ICR8600 will bring your listening skills to a new level. Start the new year right with this new communications receiver. Ultra-wide frequency coverage, real-time spectrum scope, and a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen display. Now available, the ID51A Plus 2 provides new models for extended D-Star coverage. Available in 5 colors, the ID51A Plus 2 allows you to listen wherever you go. Terminal and access mode, send and receive text messages and pictures, DVFast data mode, and easy FM repeater settings. Ideal for the contest or on the go, try the IC7300. It's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design. The real fun starts here. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation, register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats, and while you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For January, that new radio is going to be the ICOM ID51A Plus handheld, dual band, dual watch, VHF, UHF transceiver. It does both analog and D-Star, has a built-in GPS receiver, DV and FM repeater list functions included, independent AM-FM receiver. You can download a free Android app for it, and a lot more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. After this and each episode of Ham Nation, register to win, sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, last week, we had a contest malfunction, and we were not able to give away this MFJ 113 digital clock. Well, we're going to give it away this week. I won't go into a lot of details other than to say we do have a bona fide winner, Gene Moore, N8YRF, and he knew that if you've got one resistor and you want to increase the resistance, you just add another one in series. Congratulations, Gene. We'll be getting this right out to you. And we'll be back next week and announce, whatever the next prize is going to be. And right now, let's throw a line out to Don and see if any news comes back.
We do have news. Why don't we get right into that? Here is the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. Report number 2047. These are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. Like a phoenix rising from the ashes, the Amateur Radio Parity Act has been revived.
Lawmakers on Washington, D.C.'s Capitol Hill are calling it H.R. 555, but hams also know it as the Amateur Radio Parity Act. The measure was reintroduced on Friday, January 13th, into the 115th Congress, where it is sponsored by Congressman Adam Kinzinger, an Illinois Republican. His co-sponsors are Congressman Joe Courtney, a Connecticut Democrat, and Congressman Greg Walden, W7EQI, a Republican from Oregon. Walden is also chairman of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, where the new bill is headed. It will first get consideration in the Subcommittee on Communications and Technology. The act directs the Federal Communications Commission to prohibit the application of deed restrictions that ban amateur radio operations. Hams are hoping Walden's outspoken support of the bill's previous version will help it gain traction again.
Jim Dameron, N8TMW, with that report. As time and technology marches ahead, on a marshy section of New Jersey coastline known as Good Luck Point, the final bits of radio history are about to disappear.
Luck has finally run out for the coastal New Jersey site, Good Luck Point. It was home to Ocean Gate Radio, the Atlantic Coast hub for the high seas shortwave service of American Telephone and Telegraph. The service provided phone communications to ships at sea and used the call sign WOO. Now, the federal government wants the site cleared. Beginning in the early 1930s, it was home to a transmitter station providing vital links between the shore and U.S. ships. Its operation allowed mariners to make telephone calls simply by contacting the AT&T marine operator. This was, of course, right up to the dawn of cellular phone service. The transmitter worked with a receiver about 15 miles south on the Salt Marsh, and both were a part of AT&T's National Long Lines system. The stations provided single sideband radio telephone service until AT&T halted that practice in 1999. The New Jersey sites eventually were abandoned, and Good Luck Point was bought in 2003 by a nonprofit trust for donation to the Edward B. Forsyth National Wildlife Refuge. The refuge, which suffered major damage during Superstorm Sandy in 2012, is now being cleaned up and cleared out. That cleanup includes 500 antennas and poles. Some poles, however, will remain on long after evidence of radioactivity is gone. They'll be used as platforms to support nests for osprey, which are federally protected. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
And finally this week, there's nothing like classic American cowboy fiction, except perhaps a ham radio event honoring one of the genre's masters.
When it comes to classic fiction, you can't get drama more Western than Zane Grey. The master novelist brought the romance of American cowboy life to generations of readers as he spun his novels, 26 of which are set at least partly in Arizona. Perhaps his most famous is Riders of the Purple Sage, published in 1912. A different kind of Western drama will unfold starting January 28th inside the now historic Zane Grey cabin, where he lived and wrote in Payson, Arizona. Members of the Tonto Amateur Radio Association will be on the HF bands as special event station K7Z, marking the novelist's birthday. Hams will operate from the cabin itself on Saturday, January 28th and Tuesday, January 31st, as well as their own QTHs. Despite temperatures inside the cabin expected to reach as low as 30 degrees Fahrenheit this time of year, the club is prepared to give a warm welcome to visitors. Who knows? What they see and hear may feel a little like the same kind of high adventure of a Zane Grey cowboy novel. Radio style, partner. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all for the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron in 8TMW, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And speaking of the Amateur Radio Parody Act, hams in Missouri are also working on their own parody act, the MARPA, Missouri Amateur Radio Parody Act. And they met in Jefferson City, Missouri, the state capital, yesterday. So we'll have a story on that coming up Friday in the most current Amateur Radio Newsline when it's released. Tamitha Scove is not with us tonight, but she did send me some information. So let me pass along an abbreviated solar update for you. We do have more. This is what she sent me. We do have more fast wind coming due to a coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth's strike zone within the next day or so. This will cause issues for propagation easily into the weekend and possibly all weekend long. She says she hopes there aren't any big contests being planned. And checking the flare particle radiation forecast, looks pretty good this week. A number of active regions in Earth view, so the solar flux will stay at the upper end of marginal, should bring fewer issues on the ham bands. Tiny bit of flare activity might increase noise levels momentarily on the day side, but the chance of a radio blackout this week remains very low. And as always, you can follow her on Twitter, at Tamitha Scove. And that is her Twitter page right there. So there you have it. Some good stuff tonight. And we're going to get right back into the show and check with Amanda and your chat room questions after I tell you about a brand new sponsor to Ham Nation, and that is Hover. This episode of Ham Nation brought to you by Hover. When you have a great idea for your blog or your startup, you need to give it a great domain name. With Hover, it's amazingly easy to set up your domain name with the most popular website builders. They have over 400 domain extensions, all the classics, .com, .net, niche extensions like .design and .tech, even quirky extensions like .pizza, .ninja, .horse. Wonder if they have .ham, .ham radio. I bet they do. Once you find your domain, you can use Hover Connect to set up your domain automatically with your website in just a few clicks. You can also use it to get more on-brand or professional email address. Your domain works with whatever email programs you're already using. So roll your own email client, and it's going to work. When all you want to do is buy a domain name or an email address, you shouldn't have to opt out of page after page after page of add-ons that you don't want or you don't need. That's why Hover offers only domains and email. So you focus on finding a great domain name and get back to working on your great idea, which is what you do best. Unlike most other domain providers, Hover includes free Whois privacy with all the support domains to keep your information confidential. And if you already have multiple domains scattered across other domain providers, you can save money by bringing them all to Hover. They offer volume discounts. The more domains you have in your account, the more of a discount Hover will automatically apply to that account. With Hover, there's no more digging through help articles to figure out how to get your domain working. If you need a hand, give them a call. Hover's awesome support team is there to help you. Hover. Find the perfect domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com. That's H-O-V-E-R, hover.com. Use promo code HAMNATION at checkout, and you'll save 10% off your first purchase. Hover.com, promo code HAMNATION. Brand new supporter here of Ham Nation, and we do appreciate them coming on board. So, thank you, Hover. Now let's go into the Colorado area and check on the chat room. Pinky, what's going on? What are they asking about?
You and I are going to talk later, Don. Going to talk later. Hey, though, I want to say hi to Val and Jerry first. Val, you do still have Jerry with you, right?
Old gang here.
Oh, awesome.
Hi, Amanda.
So we had a rotatable dipole question, so he called him the antenna guy. So if your Jim, antenna guy is still
Jim,
there.
Break all.
The antenna guy. Okay, Jim. And this comes from Kevin in New Zealand. The antenna guy. Thank you so much. Jim, can OWA be used for a 40-meter rotatable dipole?
Oh, yes. No problem at all. It would work for a wire dipole with the transmission lines, or it can work for a rotatable dipole made out of tubing, or it can work for a Yagi as well. So that technique can work for a rotary dipole with absolutely no problem.
Very good. And my next question for you is, do you have a place where you had the specs for your new design of a dipole?
Okay, yes, I gave a talk at the Antenna Forum this past May at the Dayton Hamvention, and K3LR is a good friend of mine, Tim Duffy, is the moderator for the Antenna Forum, and he keeps all of the talks from the Antenna Forum on his website, which is K3LR.com, and if you go there, you can find dimensions and all the information. And I plan to write an article, hopefully for QST, coming up this year as well, and publish some of this information further. So people that weren't at the Antenna Forum or at the Puerto Rico Convention would be able to get that information.
Very good, Jim, and thank you so much. Thanks for being there. I hope you guys have a fun time. And Val and Jerry, I heard, what did you say? You're going to actually climb up part of the antenna tomorrow?
Did I? Yeah, you can go out on, what do you call that thing? Out on the platform. So we'll be out suspended on cable over the 1,000-foot dish. How high up will we be? 500 feet above the dish. So I will take photos. I can't. That'll be me. There you go.
Oh, Brian, that's not right.
Oh, Jerry, that is I don't know. So, yeah, looking forward. I will take pictures. We're under RF silence here, so we can't. I can't do a Facebook Live or anything, darn it, because it'll interfere with all the experiments being done here. But really looking forward to that.
Okay, well, you guys have an excellent time this weekend, and I can't believe Brian just showed that. Brian, you shock me sometimes. I am. He made me blush.
Hey, wait a minute.
I can't believe that.
Wait. There's a red thingy heading for the green thingy. I think we're the green thingy. That's a joke.
Hey, gals, I can see it now. I can see it now on the front cover of QST. Arecibo dish broken by a curious ham radio operator dropped the camera.
No. We don't need Puerto Rico to be mad at us. Come on.
I have a great question for Jerry. Jerry's still there? This is a great question. I think everybody will enjoy the answer. Jerry, you've been around the world many times with your radio, but most of the time it's like sleeping on the ground or not sleeping at all. How's it to be in the Caribbean and you get to go to a really nice bed and get a nice shower? Does that feel a lot different?
Bob, all I can say is this is living. This is great. I mean, and the showers are even have hot water. Puerto Rico is great. This is the second time I've been here. So, yeah. And the people here are wonderful, and the hams are great. We're going to have a great convention here.
Well,
I forgot to ask Angel about SETI, Little Green Men. Do you have anything going on with that here?
Well, actually, if you saw that picture, that structure in the dome, we have an antenna that we piggyback. Okay, what I mean piggyback is when radio astronomy is running, there is actually a whole setup, a whole system that's set up for SETI, for search for extra terrestrial intelligence. I've got something on something, but the thing is, so actually you can see this. You can see the data that we take at from the telescope. If you go to SETI, SETI.org, okay, Yeah, SETI. If you go to SETI.org, you can actually see the data that we take. So how this works is you download a screensaver, and the screensaver actually connects to the data that we took at the observatory. So when your computer is inactive, the screensaver activates itself, goes on the internet, downloads the data, and you can analyze the data. So if ET phones home, you can win the Nobel Prize. So we can see that. So you can do that. Go to SETI.org and download the download that screensaver, and you can see actually the data that we take. We analyze millions and millions of frequencies at the same time, and so obviously everybody says real quick, how do we know it's an extraterrestrial signal? Because everything in space emits radio waves. Everything, even your body emits radio waves. But only an intelligent civilization can emit a narrow band signal. So if the moon passes by and we can and we're drifting over, you can see the moon and you'll hear like a shh, and the moon will go shh, you'll just hear a louder hiss. But if there was an ET that was going over the dish, you would hear shh, beep, and see that narrow band signal. Is because only an intelligent civilization could admit that. So that's when we'll know that ET did phone home. So yes, we do a study in the background. In the background, we'll do that. The University of California, Berkeley has that set up here.
Well, I'm going to download that. So that's any other questions?
This is so good, so good. I appreciate you doing all this. I know it's quite a thing for you and Jerry to get all set up, but the connection's been super. So thanks a lot for doing this, and we'll look for pictures and more reports in a couple of weeks when you get back in here, and especially from the convention. That's a really great show. So I appreciate you being there. Amanda, you have any more, or are we going to wrap her up?
Well, we'll do both. Real quick, Val, how are you getting your signal service right now, since you said it's a kind of a quiet zone? How are you streaming out to us right now?
We're hardwired in.
Yeah, since this is a radio telescope, there's no Wi-Fi, no cell phones, but we connect everything. Everything is wired. Everything is hardwired. So we're actually using the control room's computer here, and then we're just Val's microphone and camera connected to that, and we're going over the internet. We have a very, very, very fast internet connection, so I'm glad that Bob mentioned that it was going out fine. I'm glad. I'm sure the big guys upstairs will appreciate that we got a good connection.
Yeah,
it is. It is great. And you guys, I saw that SETI is on Twitter, so be sure to follow them. I bet you can find some interesting news out there, and when they do contact ETs, so. Bob, I'll just go quickly with some net announcements here, and we'll let you wrap it up. First, we have the DMR net on TAC 311. I always get it wrong, TAC 311 or TAC 311. Anyhow, also we have the EchoLink Dew Drop-In net, and the 40-meter HF net is going to be on 7192. Val, I bet you can work us from there. Give it a shot if you have time. Anyhow, and also we have the D-Star net on 14 Charlie. And we have some great net controls. And I wish all of you guys would get out there and join those nets and support them and tell them what a great job they're doing. So with that, Bob, that's all I have. I'll send it back to you.
Well, I appreciate everything that you've done tonight, Val and Jerry. And I'm personally so thankful that Sean came on at... we have so much more to talk about, but he got away before we... I wanted to tell everybody. I told you about the opening page that the new CEO, Tom Gallagher, wrote. You have got to read it. It means so much to every ham. Find it. If you don't belong to the ARRL, do it. And it's a wonderful organization. And you, this QST alone has so much information, and it's getting better and better. They're building things, they're fixing things, they're showing us all kinds of stuff. Please pick up QST, but as this month is amazing. And Tom will be on here in a few weeks, and we'll talk more about that article, because it sure means a lot to amateur radio. So I think that's all tonight. Brian, you did a stellar job, and We'll look forward to all of you next week. I think I'm back in Pleasant Hope next week, but you never know. You saw I have all the shoes plus many more, but we can make it happen. So for everybody here tonight, thanks for watching. Tell all your friends about Ham Nation. And in the meantime, we're going to go finish up here. We still have some work to do tonight and building more stuff. We got all these orders coming in here from great equipment, so we better go take care of that, and that's what we're going to do. So 7-3, everybody. I won't be on the air tonight. Don't have any radios here, believe it or not. Well, no antennas. That's the problem. We'll talk to you next week. So long for now.